discerninghearts.com, and Spirit Catholic Radio, in cooperation with the Pope Paul VI Institute, presents Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. Dr. Hilgers, after being deeply touched by the teachings of Pope Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae, founded the Pope Paul VI Institute for the Study of Human Reproduction in Omaha, Nebraska. Dr. Hilgers, along with his co-workers, developed the Creighton Model Fertility Care System. He would go on to discover Napro technology. In 1994, Pope John Paul II appointed him to full membership in the Pontifical Academy for Life. And with his wife Susan, Dr. Hilgers serves on the Pontifical Council for the Family. Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We have been talking in the last several segments on helping women to heal, finding the root cause of what causes the issues that are going on in our body, working together, cooperating, to be able to determine how we can be better stewards of this wonderful gift of a life that God has graced us with. One of the issues for women that there are so many who experience this is premenstrual syndrome, PMS. I remember growing up in the 70s, Dr. Hilgers, where my mother would say, never admit to it, don't ever talk about it, don't ever say anything because we're striving to be equals. So we silently suffered for so many years, but then again, some of our suffering wasn't so silent.
Well, actually, you're quite right about that. And the tragedy of that approach has been that actually it's held people back because it's a real condition. And so long as you deny its existence, you don't get treatment for it. You don't get evaluated for it, obviously. And you just continue to suffer with this problem. It's a very, very treatable condition. And you'd think something that's so, in some ways, common, and yet, in other ways, basically simple, would be so politically charged and complex, or made complex by, on the one hand, the feminist movement, and then the other hand, the medical profession itself. Mm-hmm. So you've got the feminists who don't want to admit that this occurs because some woman won't be elected president of the United States because of it. And on the other hand, you've got some obstetrician gynecologist who has been told by his organization, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, that progesterone is of no value in treating this condition. And that's definitive now. It's absolutely definitive now, according to the American College. So in both cases, they're wrong as far as I'm concerned. And we've had tremendous success in evaluating it and treating it as a condition. And the women who've been treated they're really grateful, and they feel so much better. It's just incredible.
It is a syndrome that not only affects the woman, but almost everybody surrounding them, because for a spouse or for other family members, it can seem as though it's so unpredictable that it just will come at you when you least expect it.
Well, it's true. I grew up in a home where my mom had pretty bad premenstrual symptoms, but I was in high school and I didn't really realize. All I knew it is that once a month for a couple of weeks she was kind of off the wall, and my dad, he was a saint living with this, people would say, in our family. I don't think anybody outside our family knew much about it, but and I didn't really realize it was premenstrual syndrome until long, long, long time later. But I do know that was one of the reasons, probably for my own interest in it. So I have a kind of a personal feel for, you know, how frustrating and discouraging and difficult it can be within a family environment when a woman is suffering from this condition. And it's a condition that's a hormonal abnormality. It's not just because she's mad. It's because she's got a hormonal condition that's causing this. It only occurs during the premenstrual phase of her cycle. That's why they call it premenstrual syndrome. And it's caused by stress. There's a lot of stress involved as a precursor to it, as it alters the hormones. But if you go and get these hormones evaluated and then treated, then you can, 95% of the time, these women will feel a lot better.
And it's more than just someone losing their temper, because there's a whole lot that can happen to the female body because of the differing hormone levels. So you have symptoms such as bloating, breast tenderness, teariness, just wanting to cry at the drop of a hat, fatigue. I mean, there's the list goes on and on.
Yeah, depression, fatigue, gaining weight, feeling bloated, breast tenderness, irritability, carbohydrate craving. You hear women who say, I love chocolate, you know, that kind of thing. Weight gain, insomnia, sometimes headaches. Those are the core, maybe 10 different types of symptoms that we see. And if they occur 4 days or longer before the onset of the menstrual period, we would describe that as premenstrual syndrome. Or in some books, they call it premenstrual dysphoric disorder. That's more the psychiatric diagnosis of it. And it's a little bit more severe form of premenstrual syndrome in any regard. But from our point of view, the people that we see with this condition usually have PMDD rather than PMS, but they're definitely related conditions. But there's another probably 150 other symptoms that can be seen during this period of time. Sometimes women have difficulty concentrating. Sometimes they feel all wired inside. I ask them, do you feel like you're all wound up inside? You can't let it go. You can't like unwind like a spring would unwind. They say, yeah, that's how I feel, at least one of the symptoms. So there's a whole lot of things. Even things like asthma can be worse premenstrually. People who have sinus infections can be made worse during the premenstrual phase of their cycle, and then the list goes on and on and on. I've treated people with seizure disorders because they're worse during the premenstrual phase of their cycle, and with progesterone supplementation, cooperative progesterone supplementation, the seizure disorders come under control. So it's a whole raft of different things that are associated, but the timing is what makes it premenstrual syndrome. It's that time, that week or 10 days or 2 weeks sometimes before menstruation. Sometimes it goes for a few days into the menstrual period. Sometimes it isn't so strong there, but it's much stronger around the time of ovulation. So there's different kind of sort of pictures or presentations of it. But they're all basically due to the same underlying hormonal disorder, which is a decrease in progesterone and estrogen during that week or 10 days prior to menstruation.
For many women having this, because we've been told that we need to deal with it, don't admit it, because that will show that you're weak and that you may not be able to perform your job functions or that there's something really wrong with you. There are over-the-counter treatments that are really insignificant. It's one of those things just treating. They give you an antihistamine to tire you out so you're not stressed.
Yeah, right.
When you really look at this, or they give you something so that you'll drop water.
Right.
But none of this.
A little diuretic, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe an acetaminophen or something. But that in itself is slightly ridiculous, isn't it? Because
There are a few things. I mean, women who have mild some premenstrual symptoms, say 1 or 2 days prior to the onset of menstruation, are actually pretty normal. If they're kind of exaggerated and maybe a little bit disturbing, taking a supplement with vitamin B6 in it can even help. So there are some mild forms of this where it can be of some help. But the people that we take care of, generally speaking, have these symptoms from about 7 to 10 days prior to the onset of menstruation. It's disruptive to their life and to the people around them. And so this is a group of people that we evaluate. We have them start charting their cycles using the Creighton Model System. We do a post-ovulatory or a post-peak hormone profile, a PMS hormone profile, which includes progesterone and estrogen and thyroid function. And based on that, we can evaluate the underlying hormonal disruption, and we can effectively treat it.
Some women have gone to their gynecologist and have said, I have PMS. And I'll share my own personal case. I was placed on the birth control pill at a very young age because I experienced premenstrual syndrome symptoms.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily the best treatment.
It's not a good treatment at all, because actually in the long run, it'll probably make it worse. Especially when you come off the birth control pill, because it does suppress these hormones. And by being suppressed, once you stop the hormones, your body has to recuperate, and it doesn't always recuperate fully. So birth control pills, even to this day, I spoke with someone just the other day who said they were placed on birth control pills for premenstrual syndrome. Even to this day, it's being used, and it's absolutely 100% not a treatment for it. The other thing that's used, in fact, the sort of treatment of choice right now in the medical arena is Prozac, which is an antidepressant.
Mm-hmm.
The drug company even changed the name of Prozac to a much nicer sounding name, sort of a feminine sort of a name, and yet it was the same drug. And it was just for premenstrual syndrome, so they tried to market it a little bit on a different wavelength, if you will. they didn't get too far in all of that. But even to this day, meaning right now, Prozac is considered the treatment of choice. And that's what I was getting at earlier about the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology. They have said very definitively that the use of progesterone in premenstrual syndrome, it has been shown now definitively to be of no use and no help. And it's very disturbing to me to see a reputable professional organization such as this, in a sense, make such a fool out of themselves. I looked up all of the six articles that they referenced. These are the randomized controlled trials with progesterone. Of these six studies, five of them did show that progesterone didn't work. That is correct. And one of them showed that it did work. Now, what was the difference between the five studies and the one study?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a major difference, and that is that the progesterone in the cycles where the studies where it was unsuccessful were not given at the right time of the cycle. And the only study in which the progesterone was given targeting the cycle properly showed that it was effective. And they did this using some hormonal target measurements so that they could determine when the woman enters the post-ovulation phase of her cycle, because that's when progesterone will be helpful. And, of course, that's when we use it, because they're charting and they can take it at the right time. One of the beauties of NAPRA technology is to be able to take these hormones, progesterone especially, in a way which cooperates with your cycle. If you give it 2 or 3 days ahead of ovulation, it does exactly the opposite. It inhibits the normal cycle. It messes with the hormones, creates an abnormality all of its own. So in a way, it's an iatrogenic or a doctor-stimulated abnormality or produced abnormality. So a lot of this came because of a family physician whose name is Dr. Katarina Dalton,
mm-hmm.
from England, who made a really, really big thing about premenstrual syndrome and the use of progesterone. And she just blasted everybody if they didn't use progesterone. And I had a chance to meet her one time, actually, and she was a kind of a crusty old lady who I had a lot of respect for, because she believed in her heart and soul that what she was providing was helpful to patients. But there was one problem in what she was doing, and that is that she didn't know how to target the cycle very well. Well, of course, the obstetrician gynecologist, sometimes they take things like this and they just destroy it. They don't study it. They don't think about how the progesterone was being given, or maybe it was given at a time when you're not supposed to take progesterone. And these are all things they really ought to know better. But they just decided to destroy it. So they take these studies and they misinterpret them, and they've indicated that progesterone is no value. But in our own studies, we've been able to show conclusively that progesterone and estrogen are definitely decreased in that week or 10 days prior to menstruation in this group of women. And that if you give either progesterone, or there's a hormone called HCG, which you can give, which will stimulate the ovary to produce both progesterone and estrogen, you'll begin to get very high success rates. But it's got to be given cooperatively with the cycle. You can't give it before ovulation. You know, there's other factors, but it's so easy to do. And again, going to the American College of OBGYN, since they've poo-pooed natural family planning approaches so badly over the years, they wouldn't even look at it because to them it's just silly. Mm-hmm. And yet this is the very key to unlocking the ability to treat this, because it'll tell the woman when to take these medications. And it's simple to do. It's just so simple and it's so easy.
We'll return to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers in just a moment.
Spirit Catholic Radio presents Faith Check. Here's Greg Ewell.
Welcome to Faith Check. Many people ask why the church is against birth control if it allows natural family planning to avoid pregnancy. The Catholic teaching that it is a sin to use contraception is nothing new, but the perennial teaching of Judeo-Christian morality. Only in the 1930s did any Christians begin teaching that contraception could be morally acceptable. The sexual union between a husband and wife is a renewal of the wedding vows, which say that I love you freely, totally, faithfully, and fruitfully. To come together in intimacy while deliberately sterilizing the act goes against the intrinsic meaning of intercourse. It says, I love you, but not your fertility. When a couple has discerned that there are serious reasons to avoid a pregnancy, there's nothing sinful about periodic abstinence during the fertile times of the month. Intercourse still remains a renewal of the wedding vows, a total gift of self that is open to the authentic life-giving meaning of sex. Divorce rates among couples using natural family planning are almost non-existent because couples grow in self-control and respect for one another's bodies, which leads to healthier relationships and even more passion and intimacy. This is Greg Ewell for Faith Check.
We now return to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. The Pope Paul VI Institute and its ability to be able to educate the woman and having others who you have trained to assist in that crate model detection of charting yourself and cooperating. If it were just up to you to tell everybody, you know, you could walk in and give them a pad and write on a piece of paper and then go into the next examining room. I mean, that's the process a lot of people are going through, because how many other people work with educators in their gynecologist's office?
Right. Well, you have to organize your office in a different way than what the normal GYN office is organized to do. In the normal GYN office, the doctor writes all the prescriptions and everything emanates from that point. We have a whole education program associated with our practice. It's the Fertility Care Center of Omaha, which it was where our fertility care practitioners are, and they're the ones who teach these women how to chart their cycles. And they're all trained through our allied health education programs. But if you don't have that, of course, it's definitely a drawback, because you can't do some of the things I'm saying can be done. But all you have to do is get one of these people in your practice and you can do it.
Women want to be able to, for lack of a better way, they want to beat this PMS thing, especially in that area of irritability, because there's nothing like a woman who has snapped at a spouse or snapped at a child when it was undeserved, and you don't even know yourself why you did it.
Right.
You stand back and you hear words coming out of your mouth that you're saying to yourself, why am I doing that? And to be a part of a process that can help you to control it, that you know that it's coming, and you have the ability to be able to help your body respond properly, it's a marvel, I think. And the Pope Paul VI Institute really helps women become better stewards of their body.
Well, you're absolutely right about the women not knowing why this is happening. And on the one hand, they shouldn't be expected to know, since the whole field of obstetrics and gynecologists says we don't know that this happens, or maybe it's not real anyway.
Or they give you Prozac.
Yeah, or they give you Prozac, which doesn't do much good at all, to be honest with you. So it's really a tragedy. I think it's a big failure of the medical profession and how they approach women's health. Now, this, we're talking about the luteal phase of the menstrual cycle, which is the post-ovulation phase, that 2 weeks from ovulation to menstruation. Now, that's not only important from a premenstrual point of view, symptom point of view, syndrome point of view, it's also important in infertility. It's also important in miscarriages. It's also important, we think, we only have preliminary evidence on this, but it may very well be important in the development of breast cancer. So there's a lot of factors here that should compel the medical profession to get a better way of looking at this and understanding it and working with it. But they just ignore it. They consistently continue to ignore this. And so long as they do, they're not going to be able to help these women with these problems, whether it's, infertility or miscarriage or premenstrual syndrome. In fact, we've studied the women who have infertility. We've studied the women who have repetitive miscarriages and the women who have premenstrual syndrome, and they all have premenstrual syndrome at about the same incidence or rate. Mm-hmm. The infertility and miscarriage group isn't quite as high, but it's the same complex hormonally that's occurring in all three of these situations. And so there's a lot of reason for us to want to understand this better. But we just keep going down the same road of not wanting to know, not wanting to understand further, putting down people like Dr. Dalton who made a good faith effort at trying to understand this. Instead of, in any other field in obstetrics and gynecology, they'd say, it doesn't seem to work the way she exactly said it, but maybe if we made a little minor variation, maybe this would work, or maybe that would work. And then over a period of time, something new comes out that's better and better and better. That's how it works. That's how science works. But no, when that came out 50 years ago, she was torpedoed by the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology and similar organizations. She was basically put on their almost hate list for what she did. And what she did was just to try to help people with a problem that she knew existed, because, as I heard her tell me, she had this when she was a young doctor, and she just wanted to find out for herself, what could I do about it? And so on her own basis, when she took progesterone, she was able to feel better. So You know, it's tragic, but this happens to a lot of people. It happens in our field a lot. I mean, we've been targeted because we approach medical care differently than other people. You know, they like to make comment like, you know, we're weird or we don't practice according to the standards of medicine or whatever or whatever or whatever. None of that's true. We do practice differently, that's correct, but we practice in a way which is solid scientifically and solid in terms of its overall effectiveness and safety.
We have discussed this time and time again on how the medical community, they make an assumption that the patient is incapable of doing something that seems on the surface complex, but really isn't. I mean, either charting yourself or being a part of the treatment, that KISS syndrome, that keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
And sometimes patients are guilty of wanting that themselves. But giving a woman a serotonin uptaker like Prozac that affects a chemical in your brain to help deal with something that's going on in another organ of your body,
right,
isn't smart and ultimately is not going to be successful in the long run.
No, it's successful in a very sort of a modicum, minimal sort of a way. But if you look at the statistics with regard to Prozac, and these are the ones published by the drug company and the studies that they've done on it. Mm-hmm. If you look at the percentage of women who have a highly effective response to Prozac, the percentage would amaze you. It's 6%. If you look at the next group, which is moderately successful, it's 37%. And no success is the rest of it. So it's 43% versus 57%. No success. If you take progesterone or HCG, you're right up there at about 80% in the highly successful or moderately successful group. The HCG is better than the progesterone even. Now, there's another drug we didn't talk about. It's called naltrexone. And we've studied this group of patients with regard to their beta endorphins. Beta endorphins are naturally occurring opiates. They're similar in their chemical structure to heroin and morphine and Demerol. Mm-hmm. And these are very much involved in the brain chemistry. And a drug was developed about 20-some years ago for the treatment of people who were heroin addicts, and it was called naltrexone. Well, we've been using it ever since that came out. In fact, we used some of its precursors even before it came out to treat patients with infertility. And if you study the beta endorphin levels in women who have premenstrual syndrome, their levels are low. They're significantly decreased. We have found this and other groups have found this. So we've used naltrexone as an adjunctive form of therapy to the women who are on HCG or progesterone. And that 80% jumps up to 95% in it. Instead of maybe 50% being highly effective and 50% being moderately effective, it jumps way up into the 90% range is highly effective. It's like they're like whole new people when they take naltrexone, and they don't feel drugged out like they do with Prozac. It attacks a specific abnormal physiology in their bodies, and it's easy to take. And the only difficulty with it is you have to start at super low doses. So you have to work with the compounding pharmacy to make sure you get really, really low doses and build them up over 3 or 4 months because it takes a while to get on it. Once you're on it, though, you can stay on it all your life. It is an absolutely magnificent medication.
It just sounds as though there's so much more to be done in this field as well, because with premenstrual syndrome, again, it affects in so many areas women who will feel either irritable or they feel depressed or they feel bloating and unsuccessful it just encompasses so many different areas. And to treat it, dare I say, topically for all those individual treatments instead of treating the underlying cause, it's a shame that more gynecologists are not out there wanting this for their patients.
Well, the big blank space in all of that is the majority of obstetrician gynecologists cannot tell a woman, either working with her or not with her, when she's ovulating in her cycle. Now, she can take her temperature, she can do these LH test kits and things like that, but they don't really think of even doing that. And the LH test kits are $30 or $40 mm-hmm. a month. Observing the mucus pattern is free. All you got to do is learn about it. And they wouldn't dare do that because they've basically said that natural family planning is worthless, and they act like it's worthless. So you have all these women out there who could be helped, but because of a kind of a inbred stubbornness that exists amongst the physicians in obstetrics and gynecology. You've got this negative view towards natural family planning, which keeps that information from the woman and the doctor, and keeps such a simple tool like the replacement of progesterone in a way which cooperates with the cycle, keeps that tool away from the patient. And to me, it's just, you know, you just shake your head some days and it rattles, you know.
It takes effort, Dr. Hilgers. I mean, it takes a little bit more than just seeing someone every 6 months or so and writing script.
Well, there's another side to that. You are quite right about that. But the other side of that is that it's really exciting and a lot of fun. I've often told people, I don't know how I could practice medicine, and I'm really serious about that, if all I had to do is write prescriptions all day long. And the same one at that. Birth control pill, birth control pill, birth control pill. But I have patients, my whole practice charts their cycles. They come in with their chart. Every time I have to look at that chart, every time I have to do an evaluation of what's on the chart, what kind of information is it giving to me, and how can we use it to better their family planning purposes or whatever disease condition we're treating, whether it's infertility, miscarriages, premenstrual syndrome, or whatever it might be. And that's really exciting. And working with these women then who give you that feedback, and then there's that cooperative relationship, is really a terrific way to practice medicine.
So once again, the Creighton model and NAPRO technology can be responsible for not only helping women, but it also helps heal relationships and families because of this nasty premenstrual syndrome.
Yeah, there's no question about it.
There's nothing to laugh about it. It's nothing to be ashamed of.
No.
But it is something you need to treat.
Well, unfortunately, we've got to the point where people are still being suppressed, you know, and that's actually one of the worst things you could do, because it just creates additional stress, which makes the whole thing worse. It's like the tiger chasing its tail, and it gets worse and worse and worse.
Are the insurance companies cooperative in this treatment?
To some extent, they are, yeah. And to some extent, they aren't. It all depends on what day they got up off the side of the bed.
Well, that's arbitrary for you. But then again, that's what Pope Paul VI Institute never stops fighting. You never
stop fighting,
struggling to bring about the best care for your patients.
That's right.
Well, we thank you so much, Dr. Thomas Hilgers, once again for joining us and helping break open this area that affects so many women.
Thanks, Chris.
You've been listening to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. To hear and or to download this episode, along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. To learn more about the work of Dr. Hilgers and the Pope Paul VI Institute, go to popepaulvi.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com, Spirit Catholic Radio, and the Pope Paul VI Institute. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join us next time for Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers.